This is Monocle on Design, our weekly look at the best in architecture, craft, furniture, and fashion. I'm Nolan Giles. On today's show, we venture to 3 days of design in Copenhagen. American artist Willie Cole shares his approach to using recycled materials. And at London Design Festival, we browse a special showcase at British design shop SCP. All that coming up right here on Monocle on Design. Do stay tuned. We start today's show in Copenhagen, where last week the city welcomed its annual event, 3 Days of Design. As part of the lineup, the Danish brand Please Wait to Be Seated showcased its new collection. I caught up with one of the company's founders, Thomas Ibsen, a former interior photographer who told me about his move into design.
Yeah, my name is Thomas Ibsen. I used to be a photographer. I've been there for 20 years. I have absolutely no education within design or engineering or even business. I'm just a photographer with two eyes in my head. And I started the company about, 5 years ago, I guess. And now we are selling in 30 countries around the world. And we are a small little organization. We are only, 7 people now, plus a whole bunch of people working freelance, you know, all different things for us. We try to stay small, but we're growing fast at the moment. So it's sometimes difficult to be small and then get everything done as well. Something has happened the last 5-10 years, actually, and lately the last 2 years. There's so many Danish new upcoming design companies, and there's so much talent going on at the moment. And I think it's really, really nice to be part of this because, of course, there was an era of the 50s and the 60s and 70s of all the heritage from the Danish design, and it's so nice to actually see, and that they do well still, you know, of course, with Arne Jacobsen and Børge Mogensen and all these guys, but it's so nice to see that there is new, fresh design coming out from young talent.
Where does Please Wait to Be Seated fit into this mix, this new generation of talent? Because from what I understand, you don't just work with Danish designers, you champion talent from overseas as well. I mean, how does it all work?
I mean, actually, there are so many companies in Denmark that is using this Nordic theme for their collections and for their way to sell in the market outside Denmark. But we have actually from the very beginning, or I have from the very beginning, wanted to make a company that does international design. And that sounds a little strange because that is big. But actually, you know, we have designers from Korea, from Japan, from Spain, from England, from all over the world. We have designers, and we also have Danish designers, and I don't really care where they come from. You know, if they are nice people and we work well together and they do good things, then I'm open to work together. And that has actually, you know, it's been very satisfying actually to work with people from other countries, from other cultures, and it actually brings something into this design of Scandinavian heritage. It brings in blood from outside, which I think is very important. But I must admit that I grew up in Denmark, and my father was working for Fritz Hansen as well when I was a kid, so I have seen all these Danish things, and it is in my blood. You know, it's all the whole Danish, Scandinavian design is so much in my blood system. But exactly for that same reason, I can actually also pick out things from everywhere else that we can sort of mix up with this.
And how does that infusion happen? Because there's definitely traces of, you know, some of the more minimalistic aspects of Danish design and Scandinavian design. There's a focus on really good use of materials in your products. So how does the Danishness make its way into these collections that you do?
What I do is I try to find the essential things of the designs that has become classics from this region. That means that I have studied it so much. I've studied down to in details. What is the good part? What can I stand on the shoulders of these designs that were done in the 50s and 60s by these great Danish designers? Can I actually use that and bring that into new design? And so everything that I do for our collection, Will Please Wait to Be Seated, is actually based on some kind of classical thing that I have investigated, or some, actually also Japanese things. I'm very much inspired by Japanese furniture and culture altogether. So by wanting to do something which has a classical visual effect, and at the same time you pour a little bit of contemporary, futuristic something over it, a layer on top of that, that's how we work, basically. I don't want to, you know, invent something that is never seen before. I want to take the best out of the best, and I want to put our red thread and our color scheme into it, and then hopefully it is, you know, seen as something new.
Brilliant. And, you know, we are here in Copenhagen. It's a Saturday. It's a beautiful sunny day. We're in this incredible building. Maybe you can set the scene a little bit as to where we are and what's happening in the context of 3 days of design.
When you go to Milan during the design event in Milan, you see all these lovely buildings and all these, the atmosphere of Milan. Well, in Copenhagen, we have this old part, this old town of Copenhagen, which is very, very small. It's actually just the streets right where we are now. That means the Queen's Castle are right behind here and the Opera House next to it as well. So we are basically in the building that is looking mostly, of all Danish buildings, like we were in Milan. But this is Copenhagen.
There's so many people coming here to see design, to explore what's happening in the city. What's kind of going on in the city at the moment, and why is it so exciting?
3 days of design is just it's becoming an event that is really, really nice, because it's not in a fair, traditional fair like in Stockholm or IMM. It's actually in all the companies' showrooms where they are all year round. So it's a good opportunity for us to actually show our city. It's a mix for people to visit here. They can visit some of the restaurants and see Copenhagen from its sunny side this time of year. And then again, you know, we have 20 or 30 different locations. We just see that this 3 days of design is just going to be bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, I think it's going to be something really, really nice for people who is interested, you know, professionals and also just private people interested in design. I think it's going to grow.
For sure. And finally, we haven't talked about what you're actually showcasing here. You've got new designs. What can people see and experience? And I'm guessing, like you said, after the event, they can still come here and see these pieces of furniture.
Well, we are introducing a lamp series from a German designer called Maike Harde. It's a mess lamp. It's a lamp for ambient atmospheres. We also have a classical pendant, which is coming in different sizes. It's a opal glass, mouth blown. That is also something new from our collection. And finally, we have a chair, which we have done with a Korean studio called Studio Pese. It's a wooden chair which is produced here in Scandinavia. And all three of them have been really well received, especially the mess lamp has been over the top. So we're very happy to be able to show the things that we have actually been working on during the pandemic.
I'd love to hear the process of the piece with the Korean studio, because obviously you mentioned you were developing these during the pandemic. But how does it work? You know, I'm a designer in Melbourne, Australia, and I've got a great idea and I love your brand. How do I work with you? And then what's the process of actually getting the piece done and here to your showroom?
Well, it's there's something called the internet. And you know, we have worked with Australian. We work with Frank Wooddale, who lives in Sydney. I've, as a matter of fact, never met him in person. But we did a chair many years ago, two, 3 years ago now. We work fantastically together. The whole way has been great. And he's sitting over in Australia, down under in Australia, and we're sitting up here. And basically, you know, if you have a good design, you know, you do have made and you think that I should see it, you know, go to our website and find my email address. It's and then shoot it to me. And I will always get back to you. And maybe it's something, maybe not. There's a lot of different things that comes into consideration when choosing the right designs. But that's the way it happens. And especially during the pandemic, you know, a lot of designers have been sitting at home designing, and they have sent a lot of things to us. And obviously also, we also do approach designers that we like to work with things that we are that is on my mind that we want to bring to the market, and so we sold them. Sometimes we're also searching for the right designers.
My thanks to Thomas Ibsen. Art Cycling is a special installation presented by Italian leather goods company Tod's at its Milan showroom during Salone del Mobile. The label, most famous for its footwear, enlisted the help of US-based artist Willie Cole. To coincide with Tod's Mosaic, a series of products Tod's is releasing using upcycled leather, Cole gathered discarded and unused materials from Tod's company base in Marche to form beautifully designed objects that were shown alongside the new collection. I met Cole at Tod's showroom in Milan to learn about his process when using these materials.
I received an invitation from Tod's to make works of art out of their waste material. The waste material being parts of shoes and handbags and rolls of leftover leather and things like that. And I was given 10 days to do that.
Before we go to the process and what you've created here, maybe we could get a little bit of background on your work. Okay. There's a reason why you're working with recycled materials here. Mm-hmm. Explain what you do.
Okay. Well, you know, my career began as a graphic designer and an illustrator, and then a computer graphics artist. But I also was into making jewelry for myself to wear out of things I found on the street. And that search for little rusty things led me to a factory, an abandoned factory in Newark, New Jersey. And in that factory, I found a mound of hair dryers. I mean, like a huge mound. The factory had been closed for like 30 or 40 years. Homeless people were living in the factory, but they were all these great materials. So that led me to start making things out of objects that I found. And I didn't have concepts, but I saw something in the objects. Like with the hair dryers, somehow they reminded me of things that I had seen in Mexico. And it led me to start making forms that were inspired by archetypes and by mythology. People talk about artists having moments of revelations, or they use the term your eyes are opened. And that's what I experienced with the found objects. You know, where I was no longer just dependent on going to the library back in those days before the internet and researching reference material, but just having an immediate reaction to these objects. So I went from the hair dryers, metal objects, to hair dryers, to steam irons, to bicycles, and it just kept growing from there. And I was able to see various cultural aesthetics in these American objects. You know, and I just decided that that's what I wanted to do in my art. I didn't think of it as recycling at first, but at some point along the journey, I was receiving an award for recycling. Then I said, oh, I'm recycling. That was probably 20 years ago. So now people call me that, the sustainability guy, you know.
I'm guessing you use different techniques to work with it in different ways, or how do you go about doing that? Because it's a skill in itself, right?
To assemble things, yes. I like to quote Malcolm X, you know, the civil rights activist from the U.S., by any means necessary. So I don't know how to put things together until I start putting them together.
Which brings us to Tod's. And you had 10 days to create this, or did you have 10 days to be immersed in the factory? What happened?
At the same time, I showed up at the factory, I think, on August the 25th. I came here on the 4th of September. So in those days, I was in the factory every morning from 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock, playing with these materials. And because of the short time duration, my first task was to go there and make something the first day. So on the first day, I made all these objects. But I didn't make them the right way, but I just had to see the form. So I made a chair, I made a couch, and I made a table my first day there. By my third day, I destroyed the chair I made, and I made this chair. And it just kind of went on like that.
And maybe let's sort of step over to the chair and have a look at this piece, because obviously you know straight away what it is because it's branded up, but then because of the white, I guess it has a real cleanness to it. I mean, how do you describe the piece?
I describe it as very Japanese, at least from the point of, say, pop culture and mythology. It's very somewhat robotic to me.
what do you kind of want people to feel, I guess, emotionally when they see something like this? And I guess the tricky part is, you know, it's a collaboration with Todd's, but it, in a way it's not, you know, you don't want it to feel overly commercial. So you're kind of dealing with lots of different things.
You know, the visual transformation is my thing. There's a quote in the U.S. from Groucho Marx that says, "Are you going to believe me or your lying eyes?" So I want them to see what things are made of in reality, in their mind, but I want them to get caught on seeing what I've created. So it becomes like a back and forth. Like they no longer can control their vision. They have to see what I made, even though their mind lets them know it's something else. So I like that experience for people.
And well, let's maybe move to the other piece that's a little bit...
Yeah,
they kind of hear this. Oh, so nice. So this is obviously what the public sees, the first thing they see when they come to Todd's. They've come to buy some shoes, and now they're kind of confronted with shoes, but in a very different way, right?
I have a history of making masks out of things, mostly out of high-heeled shoes. So after several days of deliberation, this kind of got inspired in that same direction to make facial forms. And it started with that sole in the front row there. My first day in the studio, I felt when I was over it like it was a set of dentures.
Yeah.
But I didn't know I'd use that in the piece until like 8 days later. I think I came to that awareness once I toured the leather warehouse of Todd's and realized that they work with so many different kinds of animal skins. And to make it fun, too. This kind of stuff little kids appreciate, and I like that.
For sure. I mean, that's it really makes you smile when you see it. You don't try to take yourself too seriously as an artist, or how do you juggle that as well? Because it's also tricky.
My work is all the result of play. And I'm the generation that grew up with in the U.S. with certain cartoons that always involve visual transformation. For example, an alarm clock would ring, but then the hands of the clock would become arms and it would cover its own ears and stop the ringing. So I grew up with that kind of imagery. So I've always thought about visual transformation and fun in imagery.
Brilliant. Maybe let's step in and see the final piece. Yeah.
I came here with no concepts of what to make, but I knew that they wanted furniture. And over a period of maybe a month, I proposed, I sent them sketches of different things that I couldn't commit to because I didn't know the materials I'd be using. But when I arrived here, they asked me to make a table. So that's how this came about, the table. And I wanted to use everything that they had, so that's why the shoe forms became the legs of the table.
So you kind of got these wooden lasts, and then are these plastic lasts at the bottom?
Yes, they are plastic.
And how functional is this? Is this going to be able to support my coffee at some point?
It probably can support your body as well, because there are, I think, maybe eight legs around there. So I think it can support your body as well.
And what's this made of, this part here? It's like a...
Those are the handles of handbags.
Uh-huh, okay, amazing.
Yeah. I made that on the very last day in one day, as special request. They said they should make a centerpiece for the table.
So I shouldn't say it's my favorite piece, though, but it's so imaginative, and there's so much going on. And like it still feels like furniture.
The table is kind of reflective of things I've made with steam irons, because over the years I've made a lot of floral images or mandala images using hot irons, scorching and burning the patterns into wood or canvas. So the composition is something I'm very familiar with.
And what did you take from the Todd side of things, I guess, in terms of all of this material that was available to you, but also being surrounded by, you know, such an amazing craft in terms of the making there itself?
I took patience, a lesson in patience. I visited three of the artisans, and I sat and worked with two of the three that I visited and admired their patience. As I toured the factory, you know, I'm also very interested in repetition. And I saw some of the work as being repetitive, how people would do the same task over and over and over again. And I do that in my art. I mean, I come from a working class background, so I was very, very moved to see. But I also felt very fortunate that my repetition is by choice and not just a way to make a living.
The design and furniture industry, it's clocking on to better ideas about being sustainable, but at the same time, it's still producing tons and tons and tons of furniture every year. Mm-hmm. Fashion, obviously, huge as well. it's a big question, but you know, when you're creating works like this and you know other works in your practice, what are you trying to do in terms of inspiring people to think differently in terms of their leftovers, their waste, doing things a bit better?
When I'm working, my main focus is on perception, having people see things differently. But one of the byproducts of that is it makes people think differently. And as a result, people have become more interested in sustainability. It's like I have made a lot of art out of water bottles, and I have people collect the bottles for me. But when I say, okay, that's enough bottles, they can't stop collecting them. So they continue to recycle water bottles, yeah. You know. I guess in a way, I'm like the living textbook for better living. And I see it working every day.
That was the artist Willie Cole there. His installation, Art Cycling, is due to travel to a number of locations. Be sure to stay up to date with its movements on Todd's website.
The Monocle Book of Entrepreneurs is a smart guide to starting and running your own business from the people behind Monocle Magazine. It's a handbook designed to encourage, inspire, and perhaps even gently prod its readers into taking the plunge and starting something for themselves. Inside, you'll find canny case studies of 100 businesses that succeeded, ideas on where to base your business, and advice from more than 50 industry experts on everything from finding funding to scaling up. There are ideas and opportunities for everyone from a first-timer with a dream to seasoned entrepreneurs mulling over their next venture. This isn't about getting rich quick. But it is for those interested in building something with integrity, making something that lasts, something you'd be proud to pass on to the next generation. Isn't it time you turned the page? Let's get started then. The Monocle Book of Entrepreneurs. Go to monocle.com/shop and order your copy today.
Finally, on today's show, we stay in the English capital as the London Design Festival is well underway. In its showroom in the East End of London, British furniture makers SCP and Japanese timber specialist Ishinomaki Laboratory have collaborated on a new project entitled 10 Years Later. Sheridan Coakley, founder of SCP, shares how the brand's ongoing collaboration came to fruition.
Ishinomaki Laboratory was started 10 years ago as a result of the tsunami in Japan. Keiji, the architect who founded the company, set up a workshop in Ishinomaki to enable locals to make furniture, make hoardings, to do anything to repair the businesses or the houses after the tsunami, which was pretty much devastated Ishinomaki. And he then got the locals, who were the employees of a restaurant that he just designed, to then start producing furniture, which turned into this Ishinomaki project where the furniture was then sold in a store in Japan. I saw they did a little exhibition in Paris at Maison et Objet, and we bought some of the furniture. We started to sell it in the UK in 2014, and then he decided to change the concept of Ishinomaki Laboratory so that the idea is that the furniture should be made in the country that it was being sold in. We started to produce their products in our factory in Norfolk, which is basically an upholstery factory, but it had a woodworking department attached to it. We came up with this idea that why didn't we work with some local designers in the UK and produce an SCP collection, which then Ishinomaki can license to their other makers throughout the world.
I mean, it's almost like you've kind of let these incredible cast of designers kind of let them loose with the brand. But I understand there's a few kind of constraints when you're creating these pieces in terms of the materials.
Yes, I mean, the concept is that if you've got a chop saw and a screwdriver and some sandpaper, you should be able to make this furniture. Obviously, that over time has broadened, and some of the designs are more elaborate. But they have a fairly strict brief. So they have set stock timber that you can use, certain screws that you can use, and other than that, the rules are keep it as simple as possible. And as you can see, some of these designs are a little bit more complicated than the brief. We can certainly make them, and if we can make them, and our workshop in Norfolk is pretty simple, other places should be able to make them too.
I'm Reiko Kaneko, a ceramic designer predominantly, but I work for commissions and I work with Sheridan at SCP on various projects.
But you're showing something in timber today, is that correct? Or how are you kind of involved with this project upstairs?
I mean, I designed this little piece that's like a bird table and it's the most simplest construction. I don't feel I could even call it a design really because it's not really, it's so simple. But my idea behind that was that Keiji, who's the architect behind Ishinomaki Lab, is really interested in the DIY philosophy. So when you really have to come together and create something for a need, then straight away, use what you have and use what creativity you have to create something. So I wanted to make something so simple, just two planks, raises up the bird table and just kind of a hope that, you know, it kind of to that DIY thing that Keiji has.
But it's amazing to see all the pieces together because actually maybe you can see a little bit of the designer's personality coming out in each piece, but they do work as a family, I guess, because of the restrictions in terms of materials. But I mean, for you as a designer, what do you see when you see this kind of family of work together?
The Ishinomaki philosophy, it has really strong intentions. Keiji's got some real intentions there, and creating kind of limitations in the materials that you use actually creates more interesting pieces. And I completely agree with you that each piece does show each individual designer's personality. That's kind of really fascinating, but it has a kind of a real strong language. I don't know whether that is connected to the material or people were kind of aware of that very strong sense that Ishinomaki Lab already has in terms of its style and kind of aesthetics. Well, I mainly do ceramics, but if you look at Potter's work, you can kind of see the intention of the potter is so kind of evident in the end piece. The kind of the spirit of the maker really lives on, and maybe there is a bit of that with kind of what Keiji was trying to create with the Ishinomaki Lab. It's a really good inspiration point and an intention point, I think.
The designer, Reiko Kaneko, and before that, Sheridan Coakley, founder of SCP. And that's all the time we have on today's show. If you're keen for even more design-related listening, then catch our five-minute midweek sister show, Monocle on Design Extra. It airs every Thursday. Today's show was produced and edited by Maley Evans, with editing assistance from Chris Ablakwa. My thanks to our researchers Nick Manise and Charlie Filmer-Court. I'm Nolan Giles. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.